David had trouble after this. Briefly, I want to back up to chapter 12 and verse 11. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. I will take thy wives from before thine eyes and give them to your neighbor, and so on. The point I want to especially notice, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. Now, this was not done just specifically because of the ordeal with Bathsheba. God judged that immediately, it seems, right here. But as I said before, David made more than just the one mistake with Bathsheba. It's the only one that people seem to remember and to talk about. But David made other mistakes, and they came back to haunt him, as it were, even though that God had actually forgiven him all his sin. And this simply tells us that sometimes we make mistakes that you just can't erase. And here is what happened unto David. He went into another land. He married a Philistine woman. He had a child by that woman. And just because he came back into the land and he was yielding to the Lord with his whole heart, it didn't mean that son was wiped off of the scene. He couldn't just snap his fingers and all of that previous things was completely gone. And so we find here that it is actually the son of this woman that came back to rise up against him. And of course it happened many, many years before when he never should have married that woman according to the law, according to what God had said. He should have married from one of the tribes of Israel, as he did, but he married her also. And so this son came back to rise up against him. Well, the son's name that really did all this damage was Absalom. And we will find out more about him. I won't get to him tonight, but we will see a little bit. Anyway, in this chapter 13, we find that David had a number of children, but Absalom and Tamar were brother and sister, and then Absalom had a half-brother by the name of Amnon. And we'll not read that, but he forced, as it says here, his sister Tamar. And Absalom couldn't stand that, so he took revenge. And after 2 years from this act, in verse 22, Absalom spoke unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister. Came to pass after 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shares in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited the king's son. What he did when this man got drunk, then he killed him, in verse 28. And then he fled into another country. He went back to his grandparents. Verse 37, he fled and he went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. Now, as I said, David never should have married this woman in the first place, and he would have saved himself a lot of trouble. But you see, all this comes back unto him, and so God used it, of course, for David and things of this nature. And we will find out more things about that as we go on. All right. Also, this simply tells us, in a literal sense, that if you marry out of the will of God, you're in for a peck of trouble. There's just no way that you can get around a great deal of heartache. Now, this is you talk about telling it like it is. Well, this is telling it like it is, because marriage is one of the most sincere, the most sacred things that there is. It can make you, it can break you. And so anyone contemplating marriage, just be sure that you are in the will of God, because as we find here, that David surely did have some heartache because of a marriage that should not have been. Well, enough of that. Chapter 14, Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Of course, Absalom still was in the heart of David. David loved him. And as we get on down here, we'll not read all of these stories, but really Absalom couldn't have cared two hoots whether about David. He just assumed David had been dead. And so he is actually going to try to overthrow his own father's throne. And so Joab wants to get Absalom back at this time, although I can't really tell you why. because a little later on it's Joab that kills Absalom. Now, maybe he had some kind of revenge for Absalom for some reason. I'm not familiar with all the history of that or something along that line. But anyway, he is instrumental in getting Absalom back. Verses 21 to 24, you'll find out about that, how that he persuaded the king to bring Absalom home, but David did not agree to see Absalom. Well, after this, in chapter 15, after these things happened, Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up and stood beside the way of the gate. It was so when any man had a controversy, it came to the king for judgment. Absalom called to him and says, "What city are you of?" And he says, "One of the 10 tribes." Now, he is after the 10 tribes of Israel. As you remember, there has been this particular division before. And so it's not hard to get it again. And I guess that's what he figured. And so anyone that was of the 10 tribes, well, he'd get him up there and notice that he would say, he'd just actually embrace him, as we find here. He says, "Now, you're right, your matters are right and good. And there's no man deputy to king to hear you." Then he'd say, in verse 4, "that I were made judge in the land, that every man which had any suit or cause might come unto me, I'd do him justice." He was insinuating that David did not do them justice, that he was a crooked fellow. And he says, "Now, if I were there, I would see that you did it right." It reminds us of some of the big-mouth politicians today. "Boy, if I was up there in Washington, I'd set things straight, and I'd straighten up this rat's nest." Verse 5, "it was so when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, oh, don't do that. He put forth his hand, he took him, and he kissed him." Why? You just don't need to get down to serve me or to fall on your face before me. Well, we're brothers, and this, that, and the other. So mark it well when people get a little bit too friendly with you. It can be very dangerous. For us, the Apostle Paul tells us, "Let love be without dissimulation. Let love be without pretense. Let the love of Christ rule and reign in our hearts." All right, verse 7. "Came to pass after 40 years, Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron." Now, the patience that he had waiting for this particular time, but after 40 years, he was ready. And again, he tells us of some people. Now, he was, of course, rising up and rebelling against his father. He was rebelling against God. He was rebelling against everybody. But notice what he did. He says, "I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow." That would be a vow unto the Lord. And so many times when people want to rebel, they use the will of God as an excuse. Well, don't ever try it. You cannot use the will of God or the works of God as an excuse of rebellion. God will not have it. And so he just used that to go in his own way. All right, in verse 10, "Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, you say, Absalom reigns in Hebron. And Absalom went out of Jerusalem here." He had about 200 men. Verse 12, "they sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor." Now, there were two conspiracies against David. And you'll find that some of them who went with David at the first time, they did not go with him at the second. It simply tells us that the fire is going to bring out what sort of stuff that we are made of. We will notice this in just a little while. But here is the first one to go, is Ahithophel, David's counselor. And the conspiracy was very strong. The people increased continually with Absalom. Verse 14, "David said unto all his servants, Arise, let us flee, we shall not else escape from Absalom." Probably been much easier for David to defend against someone from without, but his own son, it seems like that he gave in, and this, of course, is we would be very prone to do. All right, this is a fulfilled prophecy, of course, of what God had said, troubles from within. But notice, and I want to emphasize this, that these troubles from within are not directly a result of David and Bathsheba. These troubles are actually happening because of mistakes that were made years and years ago. And it was just not, of course, wiped out. All right? Because he couldn't just say Absalom didn't exist. Of course, David could have taken the victory over Absalom and set the case with him and Amnon right and various other things. So we can take many words of instruction at this particular time to set things right, as we go along the way, we might say. All right. Anyway, in verse 14, David said to his servants, "Let's get out of here, and lest we bring evil on us." Verse 19, then the king said to Ahitiah the Gittite, "Wherefore are you going with us? Return to the place, abide with the king. You're a stranger in exile." Ahitiah answered in verse 21, says, "As the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in life or death, I will be there also." Verse 24, Zadok also and the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God, and they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. The king told them, "Take the ark back in the city. If the Lord delights in me, then he's going to bring me back." In verse 31, I always enjoy this particular place. Now, David is suffering at this particular point because of his own son, and as I said, things had gotten out of hand undoubtedly years earlier because this son really did not have the respect for David that he should have, and of course David didn't have the authority over him that he should have had. So just trust that we never come into such a place as this, but nevertheless it happened to David. And in verse 31, they told David, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators and Absalom." And David said, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." Now, this has always impressed me because it was such a simple prayer. And it tells us, even today, that we do not need lengthy, drawn-out, eloquent prayers in order to be heard by God. He just said, "Lord, you make whatever Ahithophel says sound like foolishness." And we will find this is what God did. All right. Verse 34, he tells another counselor by the name of Hushai. He says, "You go back in there, and maybe the Lord will use you." Verse 34, "If you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant,'" that is, go in there and tell him a big lie, "'so I will now be your servant,' then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel." And so it could be that God will use you to defeat this counsel of this man. Now then, in chapters 15 and 16, as I intimated a little bit earlier, fire actually brings out the true character of people. Things can be going along wonderfully smooth, and you will never know the things that exist in people's hearts. But fire will bring it out. In other words, trouble and tribulation, circumstances. And so we find that true character is manifested in the hearts of people along whenever they begin to be, whenever they begin to feel the test. We find Ittai, whether he's for or against David. And then we find Zadok the priest, as we find here. He is much for David, and it's proven. Ahithophel, very much against David, and it is proven. And yet he has been one of David's close counselors these years. On over here in the next chapter is Shimei. We'll notice him. When David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba. This is in chapter 16. The servant of Sheba there met him with a couple of asses saddled, and he had some stuff here. And David wanted to know in verse 3, he says, "Where's your master's son?" Ziba said to the king, "He abides at Jerusalem. He said that today, well, the Lord's going to restore the kingdom to his father." And he was just going to get what was coming to him. Now, you can, after we read all of this and consider both sides of this particular story, you can make up your own mind which one was lying. My own personal opinion is that this Ziba was a rat. And you, as I said, you can make up your own mind. I prefer to think that Mephibosheth was slandered. But anyway, he tells this about Mephibosheth. In verse 5, David goes on, he came to Bahurim. And then there came out a man of the family of this house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed as he came. He cast stones at David and all the servants of King David and all the people, and the mighty men were on his right and left, and said, "Shimei," and when he cursed, he says, come out, thou bloody man, thou son, thou man of Belial." Well, you see, this has been in his heart all the time, and now then there comes a circumstance to bring it out. He thinks he's really has the supremacy at this particular point. And so now is the time to curse David. Well, Abishai was going to treat him very kindly. Verse 9, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And this is what he wanted to do. He was very jealous for David, wanted to defend him. But David said, no, you let him alone, says God, has bidden him to curse. David, of course, I'm sure, feeling very low at this time, and he would not take such vengeance upon him. We'll find later he remembered this incident, and this man did not go unpunished. But David did not do that, and we'll find some types concerning that. Verse 11, though, David said to Abishai and to his servants, behold, my son, which came forth of my bowels, seeks my life. How much more may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone, let him curse, the Lord has bidden him. It seems that David had actually learned in the case of Nabal that vengeance is mine, thus saith the Lord. And so he did not lay a hand on this man at this particular time. And so as we go on through these chapters, you will see different people shown up, and those who touched the life of David, and the reactions of them, and what happened, and so on. And so we will notice some of those next week, and also the end of Absalom, how that God took care of this son. All right, any questions before we dismiss?
This is track 4. This is class 19, and we're starting in 2 Samuel 17.
Chapter 17. We find this a continuation of the upheaval and conspiracy against David, and it, of course, is generated by Absalom, this son that we have seen before. And so at this point, there is a great conspiracy, and as we noticed last week, how that there were many who seemed to be for David previously, and yet it's brought out now that they're really not. And so as we had in our questions, that the fire and the different circumstances and so forth will bring out the true character of people. If they're loyal unto Christ, it will bring that out. And if they have things that are not right, it will bring that out. And so now, in chapter 17, verse 1, moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men. I will arise and pursue after David this night. I will come upon him while he is weak and weary and weak-handed, will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only. Now, at this point, we find, of course, as we did last week, that Ahithophel was David's counselor, but he has betrayed David and gone over into the opposite side, and he really has an opportunity to make something of himself at this particular point. Now, I just briefly want to recall one particular verse in the 15th chapter of 2 Samuel. Turn back to 15:31, because I think this is so wonderful for us. One told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And notice, David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now, this was such a very simple prayer. You can't get much simpler than that. Just about one statement, and that was it. David prayed another prayer one time, consisting of one word, help. But it was sufficient. And this one is really impresses me, especially as the way that we see the Lord answers such a prayer. And so the Lord doesn't need real eloquent sermons for prayers. Just a very small, we might say, prayer, but it is coupled with faith. Well, let us notice here how that God answered that little simple prayer that David prayed there. All right, now, verse 5, Absalom said, call Hushai the Archite, and let us hear what he says. Let's not just go by one man's words. As your counsel is good, all right. We want to hear somebody else. Now, this Hushai, he is one who is allied with David, and David told him to go back, and maybe the Lord would use him to overthrow the counsel of Ahithophel. Well, Hushai was rather diplomatic about the matter. He didn't say that Ahithophel was crazy and out of his mind. He just said in verse 7, Hushai said to Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. He didn't say it's for the birds completely, but it's not good at this time. And then he says, You know that your father and his men are mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field, and a father's a man of war, and he won't lodge with the people. So if you go out there and do that, well, you're not even going to find David with the people. And this really did sound good to Absalom. He accepted the reasoning, but on over here we'll find in verse 14, Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel." The reason for that, the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. And so notice how the Lord answered the prayer of David. He did turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Why, it was the most ignorant thing there was, as far as they were concerned. And so Hushai then, in verse 15, said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, "Thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom the elders of Israel," and said, "thus and thus," and so on. And then he sent a message unto David saying what was going to happen and how to preserve himself and to take care of himself. Well, Ahithophel took the news real gallantly. Verse 23, "When he saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass, arose, and got him home to his house, to the city, and put his household in order, and hanged himself, and died, and was buried in the sepulcher of his father." So he was overjoyed about this decision and went home and did something about it. Well, anyway, so much for Ahithophel. Chapter 18, David numbered the people that were with him. He set captains over thousands and hundreds and so on, and he divided them into three parts, each part under these particular men in verse 2. Then in verse 5, the king commanded these three leaders, Joab, Abishai, and Attai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom." All the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. All right, now, this was not wise on David's part. It was very bad counsel, and I'm sure that David knew that, but perhaps he was down to the place where he really didn't care whether he lived or died. I don't know. But anyway, flesh is flesh, and of course, even though it was in his son, and undoubtedly David saw his past, as it were, catching up with him, we might say, But he made a very foolish charge here, and of course the Lord overrode that charge. In verse 8, "The battle was there, scattered over the face of the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword. Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, 'Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak.'" So perhaps that was one time Absalom wished he were not a hippie, because he got caught in that oak, and it just suspended him between heaven and earth. And notice that he stayed there until verse 14. Joab, there was a man that found him there, and he went and told Joab. And Joab said, "Well, why didn't you kill him? I'd have given you a reward for it." And he said, David said not to. So Joab said in verse 14, he said, "I may not tarry thus with thee." And he took three darts in his hand, thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet in the midst of the oak, and he died. And so God overthrew the conspiracy that was against David. And, of course, we're going to find out this was rather hard on David. But in verse 19, we find another very good story for us, and this is especially applicable to young ministers, because it bears the responsibility, it shows the responsibility of bearing the word of God. Verse 19, "Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, 'Let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that the Lord has avenged him of his enemies.'" Now, they had these runners back in those times. They didn't have the communications that we do, and said that there were certain runners that ran back and gave the messages unto those that wanted to know. And evidently it was a very high honor to be able to run back and to bear the tidings. And Joab told him in verse 20, says, "You shall not bear tidings this day, you shall bear tidings another day, but you shall bear no tidings this day, the king's son is dead." Then said Joab to Cushai, "Go tell the king what you've seen." Cushai bowed himself unto Joab and ran. Now, Ahimaaz is figurative of young saints who have such a zeal to carry the truth, but they really don't have anything to say, as we will notice on down here. This man had nothing to say at all when he got back. He didn't satisfy the king's heart. But Cushai is the man that is rooted and grounded in the truth, and he has somewhat to say when he comes unto the king. Well, Cushai, or rather Ahimaaz, kept on at Joab. In verse 22, he said yet again to Joab, "Let me run, I pray thee." After